Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the New Energy Experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Often in this podcast, we look at households and the energy transition. But today I'm talking with one company who works with larger organisations, commercial, industrial and municipal energy users, helping them improve their energy efficiency and embrace distributed energy solutions. We'll be looking at what's hot in this area, what's on the minds of customers, and what it's like to develop and deliver these types of solutions for them. So let's say hello to our guest, Mark Apsey, who's Managing Director at energy services company Ameresco. Hello, Mark.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the podcast. Mark, not all of our listeners will know Ameresco. Many will, but many won't, I guess. So can you start with a brief elevator description of Ameresco and your role there?
Of course, yeah. Well, Ameresco, we are an energy services company, and our business is entirely focused on identifying and delivering energy efficiency and renewable generation projects for, as you said in your intro, municipalities, but also industrial and commercial customers. So across all sectors, very much behind the meter. And my role, I'm the Managing Director for Ameresco here in the UK.
Okay, and an idea of scale, there might be number of employees, number of projects, amount of capital invested, something like that.
Well, I mean, globally, we're about 1,500 employees actually now, and our headquarters are just outside Boston in the US. We are delivering last year over $1 billion of revenues associated with the work that we've been doing. So, reasonably substantial. Yeah. 22 years young.
Yep. Okay. And how long have you been with the business in the UK?
So I've been with the business since it entered into the UK back in 2014, and as part of an acquisition, and have been helping to grow our operations here on this side of the pond ever since.
Great. Well, to bring your work to life a bit, can you give us maybe three project examples, maybe pick some contrasting projects to give our listeners a feel for the type of projects you get involved in?
Yeah, of course. No problem at all. Well, three projects. So a project we've just finished very recently, in fact, in London for the University of West London was to go in and decarbonise a couple of their estates. And they've set themselves a net zero target of 2030, which is quite common. We're seeing lots of targets being set by lots of organisations. And our job was to go in and really help them find what they could do and then implement it. And so they were lucky enough to get some grant funding. In the UK, the government announced a couple of years ago now a public sector decarbonisation scheme grant funding solution for the public sector. So they managed to secure themselves £5 million of that. And we've just finished a really exciting project, actually one of my favourite that we've done most recently. We've installed solar, photovoltaic and thermal panels on one of their campus buildings and combined that with 16 ground source heat pumps, which are attached to... it's a quite novel actually, and it's possibly, I think, the largest actually combined system in the UK to date, attached to 34 boreholes going 180 metres deep in, well, the heart of West London. So it's a very built up area, residential area.
Wow.
Really exciting project.
Does that take care of all of their heating and cooling needs or part of it?
Well, almost. So, I mean, we're thinking it's going to do most of the heating, and they've got gas boilers as backup still, but through this, they'll be going into the first winter season coming up, and we think they'll be able to do all of their heating at this particular site through this system. So effectively taking out all of the carbon in the heat that they use.
And are you owning and operating that, or do they pay for that as a capex?
So we're not. So this is an interesting model. So this is a grant-funded solution. Mm. So we entered it as their partner, actually. This is the third phase of work that we've done for the university there to deliver the project and guarantee the savings. So this project is going to save something like 530 tonnes of CO2 across the campus per year as it goes forward. So they've not paid for it themselves, but the UK government have paid for it, and now it's operational.
Great. Okay, there's one. We could talk all day about these projects, Mark, so I'm going to have to control myself
Sorry,
with my questions.
Yeah.
give us a contrasting project as the second one.
Okay, so a different project actually, still in the public sector, but for a hospital. So back in 2019, we did some work for Wrexham Park NHS Hospital, which is a 588-bed acute care hospital, which serves Slough and Berkshire, just to orientate it. And that was a classic energy performance contract that we did, whereby we went in, identified some work to be done, which included de-steaming the site, putting in a brand new energy centre with three low-temperature hot water boilers and a 1.5 megawatt combined heat and power, gas-fired combined heat and power plant, and a distribution network across the whole site. So a brand new low-temperature hot water network serving over 30 plant rooms. So it was quite an intrusive piece of work, new energy centre, new distribution pipe works in a running hospital. And that was loan funded, and the loan was therefore is going to be paid back out of the savings. And we're currently into our third year of a 15-year performance period to operate and maintain the assets as well. So a little bit different from the university project.
Yeah, and in that project, you've got the incentive then for those assets to perform, basically, to deliver those energy savings.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the sort of model that underwrites a lot of the work we do, in fact, because investors want to make sure, or customers, whoever's putting the capital in, want to make sure that the savings are going to be real. And our big differentiator is that we stand behind and guarantee the savings for the projects we put forward. And that's, from a savings perspective, that one, saving over £700,000 a year for the hospital, which is fantastic, and over 1,600 tonnes of CO2 per year as well.
Great. And last example?
Well, I really want to just mention, because those two projects are fantastic and, you know, respectively, you know, the few million pounds of spend and intervention to decarbonise, but we've got to go a lot faster, a lot deeper and do a lot more. So really excited to talk about a project we're just getting started on now, in fact, which is with Bristol City Council. Bristol City Council were the first local authority in the UK to declare a climate emergency back in 2018. And they set ambitious 2030 targets for the whole city as an ambition to get to net zero. And they have, as a city, they're responsible for something like 950,000 tonnes a year of carbon emitted. So a substantial amount. And the city council itself has done lots of fantastic work already with their own team on energy efficiency retrofits into buildings and rolling out EV charging networks. And they've also started and invested in their own starter of a heat network too in the city, which is a fantastic and progressive thing to do. But what they recognise very early is that to really have that scale and step change of difference in decarbonising, needed to partner with private companies and bring in private investment to go alongside any government investment. So we've just been awarded setting up a 20-year partnership with the city to really tackle this for the authorities, estate, but also for the wider Bristol consumers.
We actually had Bristol on a podcast probably about a year ago, before they'd appointed you, Mark, talking about the process and their attitude to it. So it's nice that, congratulations on winning that project, and nice that you're able to talk about it a bit on this podcast. And presumably that will see you doing lots of different things, from heat networks, from combined heat and power, from PV, heat pumps. It could embrace a really wide range of solutions for the city.
Yeah, and look, that's the intention, right? So we're a clean technology integrator, and we can bring together all of the best technologies currently on the market to achieve the goals of the organisations that we're working for. And in Bristol, it's a really great environment because we can bring together battery storage, local solar generation, microgrid solutions, classic energy efficiency retrofits with lighting and controls, that kind of thing. But we can also do it with lots of different contracting models. So it's capable of bringing in grant funding, but it's also capable of moving on and doing things like energy as a service model, which maybe we'll talk about a bit more. But that's an emerging way of getting private finance in to invest. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got three really nice project examples, Mark. Now, I wanted to ask you, the hottest topic in the energy sector at the moment, of course, is the energy crisis and rising energy prices. Now, households are insulated to some degree in different countries from these price rises, but the sorts of customers you're working with are typically not insulated from these price rises. So what, how's that affecting you? Is that the phone ringing off the hook, so to speak, at the moment? Are project economics looking much better, or are people not, are they less focused on these sorts of projects because they're so worried about just keeping their heads above water?
That's a great question. And I think, I mean, there is definitely more pressure to act. And so, I mean, there was always the decarbonisation imperative, and a lot of our work's driven by that. But right now, with energy prices where they are, and even concerns about just resilience, will we have the energy that we need you know, through the winter and going forward? I think it's brought it into even sharper focus. And in fact, we, you know, and as a business, we're not completely immune, right? So cost rises in the energy space work through into the price of equipment that we can buy to carry out interventions and improve the situation. But if those sorts of things are running through at 10, 15% increase, we're seeing energy prices, depending where you are in the world, you know, 50, 100% plus increases in some cases in the energy that you buy. And that actually increases our value proposition because you know, the more energy you save, obviously, the less you have to spend on energy. And with it being so much more expensive, people are certainly definitely looking around and looking for solutions that we can provide.
So more interest from the market, a good stimulus to act. Are you seeing that translate into deals? Or I guess the lead time on your projects can be quite long in terms of working up solutions for the customers. So yeah, has it translated into deals yet, or can, do you think it will?
I think it will, Joe. I think the I mean, there's obviously a very acute issue here, and there's survivability questions perhaps that the businesses are looking at, and how they're going to make ends meet from a budgetary perspective. And of course, the best time to act would have been well before this crisis. But kind of the second best time, I always think, is right now. And so, yeah, there is a lead time into doing the projects because it's real engineering, right? You've got to go out to the buildings. You've got to find physically what you can do to intervene and create a business case and then work through the, you know, the funding and so on. So it can be three to 6 months to sort of get that really kicked off.
And these are big investment decisions or long-term agreements for your customers. So I imagine they have to sell the project almost a number of times. You've got to sell it to maybe the energy manager or facilities manager. You've got to sell it to the financial director, probably other places as well.
Yeah, and it's about having good conversations with customers right at the beginning and understanding exactly what the particular needs of an organization are and what they want to achieve. Because the proposition, I mean, we said right at the beginning, okay, whether you want to decarbonize, and certain people in an organization will be absolutely focused on that from an ESG perspective, or whether you're looking at the finances and thinking, you know, how are we going to reduce this bill going forward? Or how are we going to ensure that we've even got energy? And a lot of the solutions we do provide that energy resiliency as well for customers with microgrids and backups and all that kind of thing going forward. So it is really about understanding for each in each customer exactly what they need for their facilities and then being able to bring those blended technologies together.
And do customers come to you often with predetermined ideas about what the right solution is? Or are they nearly always happy to leave that to you as the experts to propose the right solution? Or
I think it's a mix, right? And we're a very flexible, independent, engineering-focused business. So if a customer's got a particular project, they think, well, we've done a bit of work. This is absolutely what we want to do.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Ameresco and we can deliver it for you, right? And then that's a negotiation around that project. But, you know, our preference, I guess, is because we cover all technologies, we like to get in a partner with a company or organization, a bit like Bristol, and say, well, look, let us come up with the projects because we do this every day. We see hundreds and we've got engineers across the UK, the US and Canada out there looking at buildings, and we know what works. So let us put it together in a package that works and gets you the most energy savings for your particular criteria.
And are you seeing any trends or changes in what the optimum or best solutions for your customers are? Either what you think is the best solution, or what customers are coming to you with saying, I'd like, you know, I'm really interested in, or, you know, ground source heat pumps, for example, rather than cogeneration.
Yeah, well, there is a trend away, actually. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, everybody wanted to put in gas-fired combined heat and power plants where there was a demand for both power and heat, and it makes loads of sense. And from an engineering efficiency perspective, it is a great technology. But now we're seeing organisations come through with very much more, stronger thoughts about we must get to net zero, therefore we have to eliminate fossil fuels, therefore we can't put in a gas-fired CHP. So then they're looking for other technologies, and that's where you get things like heat pumps coming to the fore, I think, except for high temperature applications, but industries are, you know, that depends. That's, we could get into that. But
So like that University of West London example of those 16 ground source heat pumps. And are you finding, is that how new are some of these all electric solutions or non-gas solutions to Ameresco? Or even if they're not new to you, can you find sufficient engineers with that expertise?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, the thing about a heat pump is it's not actually that complicated. So I mean, it's a reverse fridge cycle, effectively, and there are plenty of people who understand how a fridge works, and it's just sucking out the heat from the ground and then converting it and uprating it. So I think it is an emerging space, and we're seeing lots of new technologies come out. In fact, I was having a conversation with an entity a couple of 3 weeks ago where they're looking at developing real high temperature heat pumps to try and get away from this perennial problem, which is, what do we do about the secondary circuit? Do we have to upgrade all our radiators? Do we have to put in bigger pipes? Do we have to rip out all of that side of the system? Or can we just replace like for like, you know, boiler with a heat pump?
Yeah. Does it take you time? Because you're taking the risk on that, or in some models, you're taking the performance risk on that. Mm-hmm. Does that take you time to get comfortable with, or can you back that risk off? Or would you start with something small first to understand it? Or newer technology?
Yeah, I mean, there's a general question and a specific question. So with heat pumps, we've been installing heat pumps here in the UK for the last 2 years or more. We've got a lot of installations that are now up and running. We know how they work. We know how to integrate. We know how to do it.
Yep.
But I think in general, as new technologies come along, we're a clean technology integrator. So we absolutely have to make sure we understand the science behind the technology we're proposing. And our engineers are expert at looking at, well, how does that fit in with this particular system in this particular building? What's there already? Will it work? Are we comfortable with it? And then we can take a view on the risk.
Yeah. Okay. Is scale an important aspect in this business, do you think, Mark? And I'm thinking of, you know, if you've got the number of projects, if you've been around for a long time, if you've got involved in many tens, hundreds of projects, you've got a really strong base of experience and knowledge. And when you're taking the risks, the performance risk maybe, the bigger scale you have, the more comfortable you can be taking that. So how much does scale matter, or is scale the wrong metric? Is it experience rather than scale?
I think, well, it's an interesting question. I mean, in general, we just need to do more, right? So we've got to do more. Yeah. We've got to do it faster if we're going to do something about decarbonising the planet anytime soon. And so scale, I think, for me personally, is important in that respect. Okay, we don't want to be doing lots and lots of small things. We want to be agreeing, this is the programme, this is the direction, let's get on and deliver across every building that you might have, or every estate, or absolutely everywhere we've got to go. From a risk perspective, we operate and aggregate buildings together. We work in some very small buildings. So we'll work in community centres and libraries as part of a portfolio of projects, but right up to huge, kind of utility scale battery projects in South California.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd imagine, as you say, scale is important through impact, making a difference. And the learnings that you get across different projects in an organization like yourself must be really valuable as well, where you've installed those heat pumps in the University of West London and a similar project comes along in a different part of the UK or in Canada or the US, and you can pull on that experience that you've learned.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how we get comfortable with it.
Mm. I've mentioned risk. We've talked a little bit about risk. And I see a big part of the energy services business as transferring risk. So some customers may not be comfortable financing the projects themselves or be able to. Some might not want the performance risk. Some might not want the technology or even the energy price risk if it's a cogeneration scheme. So are you seeing any trends in what proportion of customers want to pay for the assets themselves and take that risk themselves, and what proportion really don't want to take that risk and want a company like you to take that risk?
I think I think there's a general trend to explore more the transfer of risk through these energy as a service type contracts. So if you think about Bristol, for example, I mean, a lot of the mobilization of investment there will be based on us coming in and investing in the physical assets. And I think, I mean, people will probably be very familiar with power purchase agreements for green power. And an energy as a service agreement, to my mind, is very similar. It's just you're potentially selling, yes, renewable generated power, but you could also be selling heat, and you can also be selling savings, and wrapping those together in a comprehensive energy services agreement, which means that the asset is paid back for over a longer time. Now, it's not all about pushing risk one way, of course. The counterpart of that is that the organization that we're investing in assets in has to be around for 10, 15 years and want to have a 10, 15 year, 20 year contract, very much like you see in the kind of commercial power purchase agreement world.
Mm. And what about the trends with that? You said more exploration of these sort of factors. Do you see trends towards customers wanting to either more comfortable in signing up for long-term deals, so 15, 20 year deals, or more comfortable in transferring the risk to yourselves in terms of performance? Is that changing, or is that still relatively static over the last 5 or 10 years?
I think it's moving. We're having more conversations with more different types of organisations, certainly in the UK, about this kind of model and how it can work, and where organisations are capital constrained, perhaps, or just have better uses for their own capital because they can invest in a new production line and generate a lot more returns than that we're looking for, and investors that want to invest in projects that we're doing are looking for, which can take a much longer term view, provided there's a sort of stable counterparty.
Yeah. Is that stable counterparty difficult sometimes if it's a hospital is probably going to be around for a long time, as is the university, but a manufacturing firm in a very competitive global business, have you found it difficult to get comfortable sometimes with those long-term contracts yourselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is always the challenge and the discussion about the balance of kind of risk and reward and who wants to invest and who doesn't and so on. And it is more difficult because in the private sector, because and in those sorts of manufacturing organisations, because they might not have that longer term horizon. But but the fact is, I always think at the moment you're buying energy and you're not in a performance contract. You're just buying it from your utility and you're not getting any service. And so those manufacturers are much more likely to be around if they do enter into decarbonising efforts and resiliency projects, and even if they're funded by us. And that's something we have to get comfortable with and our investors, but that can be dealt with commercially and contractually to sort that out. But the fact is, along the way, then those entities are saving more, whether it's energy, carbon, or improved resilience. So they're more likely to be around if they do it than not, if you see what I mean. So it's a kind of, you've got to trust that it's going to work, and we back that up with guarantees that it will. But you have to jump over that hurdle, I think, as a manufacturing organization, to take your example.
Mark, you've been in this sector, working in the sector quite a long time. It's, as you say, a huge amount still needs to be done with commercial, industrial, and municipal organisations to hit our carbon targets, a massive amount. So what advice would you give to, maybe this is slightly cheeky, not necessarily your competitors, but to people that are looking to work in this sector, what maybe the biggest things that you've learnt about working with customers over the last several years?
Yeah, I think there's a few things, really. I mean, you've clearly, whatever you're doing, whether you're doing it as an individual or part of an organisation like this, you have to understand and clearly articulate what your value proposition is. But the most important thing, actually, and we talk about it a lot, is to listen to what customers want, have those conversations, really get under the skin of organisations and really understand where their energy is going and also what's important to them going forward. Yeah. And then just make sure that you have absolute and relentless focus on delivering for the customers. And that's the beauty about being, that's why I love being part of Ameresco. We're an independent engineering company, and so we're free to pick the best solutions. And we're not looking to sell a particular product that we make, for example, or we don't do anything else. This is all that we do. So, yeah. You know, it's a you know really exciting thing. And delivering for our customers is, you know, we're only as good as our last job, is what we always say.
Yeah. Is that a cultural thing, do you think, around, because you talked a few times about listening to your customers, delivering for your customers. Is that, to what degree is that embedded in Ameresco that you see as different maybe from other organisations?
It's totally embedded. And if you hear our CEO speaking as well, you know, he'll always be talking about customer focus and exceeding customers' expectations and delivering for our customers. And I don't know, I mean, maybe we're all engineers, perhaps, or not all of us, but many of us are engineers. And so, you know, we're trained from a very early age to focus on solving problems and delivering them and making them work. And I don't know, maybe that's something to do with it, but it's definitely a huge, huge part of our culture. And people who come and work within our organization are very focused on wanting to do their bit. To work for a business and to progress and learn, but also really to deliver in this decarbonisation energy transition.
And the listening to customers bit at the beginning, there's sometimes I think that we need a huge number of engineers in the energy sector, but we also need either engineers or other skills that have that customer mindset. And you talked about solving problems, but you can solve problems in a technical way. To really understand customers, I think it's a slightly different skill set. So can you, I don't know, have you got an example or two you can bring to life where that investment in working with a potential customer or really understanding them made the difference in a project going ahead rather than not going ahead?
Well, that's a good question.
I'm putting you on the spot.
yeah, you are. So, I mean, I think... So look, let's talk in general terms, right? So I mentioned one of the projects we did right at the beginning, University of West London. And there's a lot of projects across the UK in the last 18 months or so that have been funded by the same scheme. And the public sector decarbonisation scheme requires a certain measure of pounds per lifetime ton of CO2 saved to qualify for the money. But to do that, you've really got to go in there and say, well, what blend of projects can we put in? And there's a bit of a focus on heat there, so there's lots of heat pumps. What blend of projects we can put in? Where can we physically fit them? And talk to the customers about. And it's not that easy, right? So the projects I spoke about, not much land around the university, particularly. Definitely need heat pumps to qualify for the grant. Lots of access and so on issues. So we had lots and lots of discussions about how we're physically going to actually do it, and where can you drill these 34 holes 180 meters deep that doesn't disrupt the university operators? It's live, people are learning, people are there being educated the whole time. How do you do this in a way that is sympathetic to the needs of that organization to keep running, and the residents in terms of deliveries? You know, we had just in time deliveries, no, we couldn't park up on the street. So there's a lot of talking and communication, not just with customers but with neighbors to those customers as well, to get things happening and get things going and get things working, and be sure that you can do what, you know, we'll hope to do in a particular project.
I'm intrigued now. In a dense urban setting, how you got all those 34 boreholes in the ground? It must have been,
it's tight, it's a good size, but it's very tight.
Mark, let's move then to the last part of the podcast now and bring up the Talking New Energy crystal ball, and I want to wind the clock forward just 5 years to 2027. And if we imagine ourselves in 5 years' time, what will be different from today, do you think, in terms of how your customers, so commercial, industrial, municipal organizations, engage with energy efficiency? So what do you think we'll see different in 5 years' time from today?
That's a crystal ball time, right? So, well, look, I mean, in 5 years' time, I hope we've done a lot of it, because we won't have much time left to, you know, get the greenhouse gas emissions going down rather than up. But, I mean, I think some of the stuff we've talked about today will just be standard. So things like heat pumps, renewable generation combined with batteries locally, that'll just that'll be the first thing you do. It's like lighting 10 years ago and switching to LEDs. I mean, people, that will just be, they'll be very understood, and I think they'll just go in everywhere they possibly can. I think for other customers, and depends where you are, so we didn't talk too much about industrial applications, but a little bit. But in industry, I think what's going to happen, and the engagement's going to depend very much on the processes that exist. And I think, you know, we're going to see things like green hydrogen coming through, for example, for the very energy intensive industries. And that's going to take time to develop. And the UK's got some good clusters that it's looking at and so on. But that's essential, because certain processes need high temperatures. They can't decarbonize another way. So that's where any green hydrogen we can make, for example, should go. But I think as well, what we're going to see, I don't think this is a massive leap, but and perhaps what we need to see smart grid solutions absolutely everywhere. And we need to make that investment now, because there's no pathway to net zero without a much smarter grid that allows you to, some of the constraints we see now, you can't connect to renewable generation on this site because you can't get approval from the DNO in the UK, or you can't, or the district network operator in the UK, or you can't connect a heat pump because the district network operator is not ready to give you that juice, those electrons right now. So I think that's going to be essential. We must see it by then. If we haven't seen it by then, we're all in real trouble, because it's going to stop us electrifying at the pace we need.
Are you running up against those problems today already in terms of grid capacity, or do you start to see it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You do see it now. And it is a constraint on what can be done, because if the local grid network can't accommodate a 2 megawatt heat pump here, but you've got a need for it, then you've got to do something different. And it needs to get smarter. It can't just work on the maximum capacity of all the connected loads, for example.
Yeah. And there isn't time to build a bigger grid.
I don't think there's a plan to do it yet.
No. Well, three really good trends on predictions, Mark. I like the phrase be where lighting was 10 years ago. Everyone gets lighting refits now. 10 years ago, it was a bit new and risky. Green hydrogen, I think is essential for certain industrial applications, and getting over those distribution network constraints. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Well, I can keep my fingers crossed, but you've got to do a lot of that work in the next 5 years. So good. Best of luck with that. I imagine you have a busy 5 years ahead.
Thank you, John. Yeah, I think it will be.
And Mark, thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been really interesting hearing your stories, your perspectives, the projects you've involved in, and some of the opportunities in working with commercial, industrial and municipal organisations. Thanks very much.
Hey, thanks, John. Good to talk to you.
And thanks to everyone listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope you learned something new today, and look forward to welcoming you back to our next episode next week. Thanks and goodbye.
If you're as passionate about the energy transition as we are, then please keep in touch. You can follow us and me on Twitter, LinkedIn, or subscribe to the podcasts on your chosen podcast platform. If you like the podcast and like sharing, then please do rate us. And to listen to archived episodes, to read transcripts, and to see the latest Delta EE insights, then please visit www.delta-ee.com.